Greetings, everyone. This beautiful Sabbath day. I don't know about where you were, but I know we had one torrential downpour last night. Left us with a nice big pond in our yard again. But it's going to be a nice day today, and the rest of the week is supposed to be beautiful, although a bit chilly. Well, it's good to be here today, even though we're on this virtual system again. But I'll say more about that as the sermon goes on. You know, the English language can be very complicated to someone who's trying to learn it. Someone who doesn't speak English, they're trying to learn the language. They find that one word can have so many different multiple meanings. The same spelling, the same sound, but one word can have different meanings. I want you to notice, for example, one particular word that has many meanings. I'm going to show you three of them, and that is the word keep, K-E-E-P, keep. Let's look at the dictionary definition for the word keep, and I took this from the Merriam-Webster online dictionary. One definition of the word keep is to preserve or maintain, as to keep something safe. It means to watch over and defend, to protect or take care of. A second meaning for the word keep is to take notice of by appropriate conduct, or to act fittingly in relation to, as keep the feast or keep the Sabbath. It's taking notice of something by our appropriate conduct. And the third definition is to retain in one's possession or power, such as keep a job, or I'm going to keep my car. I'm not going to trade it in. I'm going to retain possession of it. So keep means that as well. Now, I want you to keep those things in mind. Notice I said keep them in your mind. Retain them in your mind as we go along today, because we're going to be talking about keeping in this sermon. There are other meanings to the word keep, by the way, but we're just going to cover these three. And this sermon, I've never done a sermon like this before. It's going to be structured a little differently from most sermons you've ever heard. In fact, as I give this sermon, it's going to sound like I'm giving a series of three consecutive sermonettes that are all just kind of jammed together. The subject of each sermonette, if you will be totally different from the others. But all of them are going to be centered around the word keep. The first message I'm going to give you is, am I my brother's keeper? The second message is going to be on keeping the Sabbath. And the third one is going to be on keeping the faith, which use the three definitions for the word keep, as I mentioned to you already. Now, I could give these three messages on totally different days as different separate sermonettes. I want you to understand that these messages are connected by much more than just this word keep. And by the end of the sermon, I'm going to pull them all together and you're going to see just how they relate to each other. Let's look at this first one now. Are you your brother's keeper?
If you're told.
Do we have a responsibility to be our brother's keeper? Now, we know where that phrase came from. It comes from the book of Genesis, and God was speaking to Cain, and he asked Cain where his brother was. That's the question that God asked, and he said, am I my brother's keeper? Now, the word keeper here in the Hebrew is the word shamar, and that word means to guard or protect or to attend to. Are we our brother's keeper? Are we to be a guardian or a protector of other people? And if you have a brother, To what extent do you guard him? To what extent do you protect him? To what extent do you keep him? In the literal sense, as we define what a brother is here, a brother is a male sibling, literally. But in Scripture, brother can mean a lot more than that. In fact, it can mean any close relative. Let's look at Genesis 14 for an example of that. In Genesis 14, if you're familiar with the story, it's Abraham, known as Abram at the time, was going to rescue Lot, who was his nephew. Lot had been taken captive. In chapter 14, verse 12, it says, "They also took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. Then one who had escaped came and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Aner. And they were allies with Abram. Now when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his house and went in pursuit as far as Dan." So he's going to rescue what it calls here his brother. We know that he's not his brother. We know that he is his nephew. He's a close relative, but he is counted as a brother. He is a relative. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, we see that biblically a brother can mean another church member. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 5, verse 9. And here Paul writes to the Corinthian church, he says, "I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people. Yet I certainly did not mean with the sexually immoral people of the world, or with the covetous or extortioners or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. But I have written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother, who is sexually immoral or covetous or an idolater or a reviler or a drunkard or an extortioner, not even to eat with such a person." So he's talking about when these problems, these things come up within the church, within the congregation, with the other members of the church. He says, with anyone who is named a brother. So he's using that term brother there to mean other church members. Now, Jesus Christ also used the term in a spiritual sense. And if we go to Mark chapter 3, we see how he referred to this term, and he expounded upon it. He says in Mark 3, verse 32, "And a multitude was sitting around him, and they said to him, 'Look, your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you.' But he answered them, saying, 'Who is my mother or my brothers?' And he looked around in a circle at those who sat about him, and he said, 'Here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of God is my brother, my sister, and my mother.'" So in reality, in the big sense, it also includes everyone on the planet. Everybody alive today can be considered a brother, in a sense. And obviously, it isn't our job to guard everyone from everything. That would be a bit unusual, a bit impossible. But we do have somewhat of a responsibility toward mankind, and especially for our physical and our spiritual brothers, our spiritual and physical families. It is a duty of us as a Christian to consider the needs of other people. And this is the very essence of one of the two great commandments. In John chapter 15, verse 11, let's turn there. John 15, verse 11, he says, "These things I have spoken to you that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." So we are to show love for one another, for other people. We consider one another, and we avoid doing harm to them. We avoid bringing any harm upon them as much as it's within our power. This is the kind of love that Christ had for humanity. Let's keep going down to verse 13. It says, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. And in fact, Jesus Christ did just that. He did lay down his life for all mankind. And that is what we call perfect love. And we're to imitate that. We're to imitate his example. He gave all that he had to keep us, to guard, to protect, to attend to. He was definitely what you would call his brother's keeper. We all being his brothers, and he kept us. He protected and attended to us. He did something for us that will have the potential of giving us all eternal life. We need to show that same kind of love that he had for one another. Now in 1 John chapter 3, verse 16, let's go over there to that epistle that John wrote. 1 John 3:16. And he refers to this. He refers to what Christ did for us. He says, by this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. Now look at the next part. This is the important part. And we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. We should be willing to die for one another. Not that we will ever need to, but we should be willing to. We should have it in us that we're willing to go that far for a brother. We are our brother's keeper. We must be willing to help a brother in need if we possibly can. Verse 17 says, but whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? If we see a brother in need and we don't do anything to help him, we're perfectly capable. We're not much of a brother, are we? We're not showing love, are we? We're not laying down our life for him. Now, that doesn't mean we meddle in the lives of our neighbors. You know, we don't go around checking to make sure their bank account is up to date and making sure that their bills are paid. And, you know, if we see a problem that somebody has, you know, and we have the ability to help, yeah, that's great. And we should do that. We don't meddle in people's lives, but, you know, we want to be careful that we're not bringing harm on anyone, that we're not that we're protecting people and helping them. And like I say, we don't go around and check on all our neighbors. We don't carry it to that extent. But if it comes to us that someone is in need, are we willing to sacrifice of ourselves to help? I'm talking about helping others. Helping them in times of need. But it also refers to something else. It also refers to obeying the laws of the land, because the laws of the land also protect your neighbor. Things that are a part of everyday life, like zoning laws. Okay, now we live in a community where there are zoning laws. If you live anywhere, if you live in this country, you live in one of the counties of your state, that county has zoning laws that protect neighbors from each other. If your next door neighbor, if you're in the middle of a town and your next door neighbor decides to put a pig farm back in his backyard, that would probably not go well with you. You probably wouldn't like that. You would feel harmed by that. Your property value would go down. There are zoning laws to protect you from that. You know, certain things can be done in a certain area. If it's a residential area, you don't put up some kind of factory, because the noise level would just be unbearable and people wouldn't want to live there. And so these laws protect us from one another. And we abide by those laws because we are protecting our neighbors from us. We have building setbacks. setback requirements in each area, in each particular zoning district. Building setback requirements do the same thing. Now, if you want to put up a shed in your backyard, you probably have to keep it at least 5 or 10 feet off of the property line. You don't want to put it right up on the line because that could be an infringement on your neighbor. And so out of love for your neighbor, you follow the building setbacks. And the laws of the land set these requirements so that everybody is protected from everyone else. And so in that way, we are looking out for our neighbors when we enact laws like this. How about traffic laws that determine the right-of-way? How about a traffic light or a stop sign? You know, we show love for our neighbor. We show concern when we obey the traffic laws. And so we want to make sure that we're not just selfishly running red lights and stop signs and putting other people in danger. So in that way, too, we are our brother's keeper. Now, I realize that sometimes zoning laws and setback requirements might be a nuisance to us because we want to do something on our property, or a traffic light might be a nuisance because we're in a hurry to get someplace. But they are meant to protect us from each other, and it would be selfish of us to go against them and to break those laws just to do something that we want. Sometimes doing something to help can be an inconvenience to us. Sometimes, you know, we might want a shed on our property, and it's where we want it is too close to the line, and we have to give in. We have to give in to that and do it the right way. And it might be inconveniencing us, but it is what it is. And so we might have to give a little to help, to guard, or to protect our brother. But remember, we have to be willing to give up our lives for our brother. And certainly a little inconvenience like this shouldn't be a problem. Okay, let's carry it a step further. Today we're being instructed, as you heard in the announcements in the state of Delaware, you're being instructed to wear a mask if you're indoors. Now, I know it's been said that the mask only protects others from you, that it doesn't protect you from them. I'm not quite sure. I think there are a couple different opinions out on that, but it doesn't matter. We know that masks are not the perfect solution, but they might help. Certainly, we had a problem in the Philadelphia congregation 3 weeks ago, and everyone was wearing a mask, and it didn't seem to help because a lot of people got sick. But we do all we can, even if it isn't enough. And when we're told to wear a mask when we go out, we need to follow that. That's one of those rules that's maybe a little inconvenient for us. And it might be uncomfortable to wear a mask, but you might be protecting someone by doing that. Let's go to Romans 12, verse 1. Romans 12, verse 1. It says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Wearing a mask is a minor sacrifice that we make. It's not a big deal, a minor inconvenience. We should be willing to give much more of ourselves to one another, to help them have a better life, to help them be protected from harm in some way. We should be willing to give much more of ourselves. And if we aren't, we're just not being our brother's keeper. Being without a mask can also make those who are near you uncomfortable. Some people might be a little hesitant to get close to you if you're not wearing a mask. These might be people who are more susceptible to illness than you are. And so it's more important to them. It's a struggle for them to get by each day, knowing that there's sickness around them and they need to protect themselves from it. So we need to consider their feelings more than our own, because yes, we are our brother's keeper. Let's transition to the second message now. And this has to do with keeping the Sabbath. Keeping the Sabbath as a holy convocation, a sacred assembly, which is what the Bible tells us it is. Keeping the Sabbath involves coming together in God's presence. In Leviticus chapter 23, verse 3, this is what God instructed Moses and the Israelites regarding the Sabbath. Leviticus 23, verse 3 says, 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. So we see here, we're commanded to do two things on the Sabbath. That's all, just two things that we're commanded to do. Number one is we refrain from work. And number two, we have a sacred assembly. Now, the first one, refraining from our work, gets our mind off of the physical life that's all around us. It gets our mind onto the spiritual. And so we refrain from our work on that day. The second, to have a sacred assembly, gets us focused on the spiritual side of life. So one of the things we're commanded to do gets our mind off of the physical. The other one gets it onto the spiritual side. And we should never take Sabbath attendance lightly. You remember what Paul told the Corinthians? I'm sorry, the Hebrews. Wrong book. Paul told the Hebrews in chapter 10, verse 25. What did he say? Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some. So apparently some were just deciding not to attend, not to come to the holy convocation. He says, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. We should not forsake assembling on the Sabbath. And it's even more important as we get closer and closer to the last days, when the time might come when we can't assemble on the Sabbath. So Paul admonishes us not to forsake meeting together, because it helps us to grow closer to others who are like-minded. It gives us the opportunity to edify each other. So, do we ever let other things keep us from attending Sabbath services? Do we ever let something get in the way and we don't come to the holy convocation? Is that a problem? Do we ever have that problem? Like maybe one Sabbath morning you get up and you're just so tired and you don't feel like getting up. Oh, I think I'll stay home today. It's a day of rest. I'm going to spend the day just resting. Well, don't you still make it to work every day? If you have a job, don't you still make it out the door in time to get to work? You manage to do it on those days. Why not on the Sabbath? You need to practice good time management. You know, maybe you need to go to sleep a little earlier on Friday night so that you can be in good shape and physically able to get up and get ready and go to Sabbath services the next day. So we need to work on these things. If that's a problem, don't let anything keep you from attending. Or perhaps on the particular Sabbath, maybe you have house guests come over and they're staying overnight with you and you can't leave them. You got to stay there with them because they're visiting. And, you know, if we're having house guests, chances are we've known about it for some time and we've planned it all out. We need to use proper planning when we're doing things like that. And sometimes if we have something come up that just interferes with us coming to Sabbath services, we need to just have better planning practices. Think ahead. You know, the Sabbath commandment says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. Why do you think it says to remember it? Now, I used to think that each one of the commandments, you have to observe them every day. But the Sabbath was a commandment that you could only observe once a week. I used to think that. I thought that was the one commandment you only observe one day a week. And then I came to realize that's not true. It says, remember the Sabbath day. What does it mean to remember the Sabbath day? Why does that one say we're to remember it? Well, it's because the other 6 days we're not keeping the Sabbath. And our minds are not so much on spiritual as they are on the physical. That's the day we go to work. Those are the days we go to work and do our jobs. We're concentrating on physical things on the other 6 days. But we have to remember that the Sabbath is on such and such a day. And we have to remember that if we're going to plan anything, that it has to be done around the Sabbath so that it doesn't conflict with it. Like scheduling a doctor's appointment. You wouldn't schedule a doctor's appointment if it were for a Saturday afternoon. You know, because that would be a conflicting activity. You know, there are other days you could schedule it. Or a holy day. You know, you might not even think about it because it's maybe on a Tuesday. You schedule a doctor's appointment, but you forgot that that's the Feast of Trumpets or whatever. And so you have to remember these things. That's why it says remember the Sabbath day, because it is only observed once a day, but we have to remember it and keep it in mind and plan for it every day of the week. So sometimes it's just poor planning when something comes up and we don't come to services. And I hate to say it, but sometimes there's another problem. Sometimes there might be somebody in the congregation that maybe you just don't get along with them all that well. And you really don't feel like facing them today. You know, maybe you had a discussion on the phone with them during the week and didn't go well. And so, and I hate to say it, but sometimes these things do happen in the church. We're not all as close as we should be sometimes. And so maybe there's somebody there that you really don't care to see today. And so you decide, well, I'm just going to stay home. I'm going to avoid the whole situation, which doesn't make it better. It only makes it even worse. But that's a whole other problem you need to work on. And I'm not going to get into that. But sometimes these things come up. There's some kind of reason why we don't want to be there. We have an aversion to going that particular day because of something. You know, there's all kinds of reasons we can come up with why not to attend today. And I know that some people do. Some people do come up with these things and they stay home. I know of some people who are missing more than they're there. You know, they come periodically, but it's not very often. Why? Well, you know, the only time we should stay home from church is when we are contagious. We've got some kind of illness. In fact, not only is that the time we should stay home, that's the time when you are required to stay home. Because keeping from spreading illness is showing love for your neighbor. It goes back to the other message I just gave you on your brother's keeper. Keeping from spreading illness shows love for your neighbor. So if you're sick, you don't come to church. Now, thankfully, we've got this webcast that you can turn to if that happens. And if you're sick, you can go there. But we need sometimes to quarantine. In fact, that's what we did the week after we came back from the feast. We went to an all virtual service because we were quarantining ourselves after having been around other people in other areas and not knowing what we might be bringing back with us. And so we took 1 week and quarantined ourselves from Sabbath services and had a virtual service that week. That's a biblical principle. The principle of quarantine comes from the Bible. I want you to look at Numbers chapter 5 in verse 1. And if you're attending the online Bible study, you're going to hear about this in December when we cover the next few chapters of the book of Numbers, because this is the next thing discussed. In Numbers chapter 5, verse 1, It says, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, command the children of Israel that they put out of the camp every leper, everyone who has a discharge, and whoever becomes defiled by a corpse. You shall put out both male and female. You shall put them outside the camp, that they may not defile their camp, their camps, in the midst of which I dwell. So God said, if you have some kind of a sickness, if you have touched a dead body, which could mean that you've been handling a corpse and you've got some kind of, you know, whatever caused that person to die, you might have some of that germ on you or whatever it might be, and you need to be clean before you come back among the camp. If you are a leper, and sometimes the Bible talks about leprosy, and it covers a lot more than what we know today as leprosy. It covers a whole lot of different illnesses. But if we have something like that where we're contagious, or if says if you have a discharge, what's a discharge? Well, that's where liquid is emanating from your body someplace. It could be a runny nose. You know, a runny nose is a discharge, or watery eyes even. Maybe you have pink eye. You know, if you have pink eye, you shouldn't be among other people. If you have a cold, if you're sneezing and your nose is running and you just can't stop the flow, you need to get out of the camp. You need to quarantine. And that's what God was telling them to do. And that was God's way of preventing a pandemic. Because if it spread among the camp, there would have been big trouble. It doesn't matter whether it's leprosy or a runny nose, you're quarantined. Those outside the camp didn't convene on the Sabbath. They didn't come with the rest of the people. Do you know that even houses could be infected with what the Bible called leprosy? A house could be infected. Now, this was talking about more of a mold or a mildew scenario where this mold was taking over the house and it was growing. And so there were rules on that. If it couldn't be remedied, the house was ultimately condemned. Any infected clothing, you know, if there was something on the clothing that was a mold or some kind of disease, or even blood, if blood gets on clothing, it would need to be destroyed. And you can read through Leviticus 13 and 14 and see all of the different things that they had to do in Israel if that was the case. God instructs them how to do this to stay healthy. And that kept disease from spreading and affecting many people. Now, God created all things biological, and he knows what a virus is. He knows what germs are. And he doesn't want us to risk infecting each other. And so he's given us people who are skilled in controlling diseases. He's allowed us to have in our society doctors who know about disease and disease control. And so taking measures to protect the assembly when there is an illness is an Old Testament practice, and we've seen it here. If we are contagious, it is the one time that we should stay home and not come to Sabbath services. But we're also blessed because we live in a time of advanced technology. And when we're contagious, like I say, we still can attend by virtual means. Due to our current situation with so many illnesses in the Philadelphia congregation, and so far Delmarva has made out pretty well, but that's not to say we haven't had our share of illnesses there either. But we're blessed to live in this time of advanced technology. And so we can meet this way by virtual means if we're contagious. And we should give thanks to God for the ability to meet virtually, because it allows us to still fulfill the command for a holy convocation. Now, in the times of ancient Israel, when they were put outside the camp because of an illness, They didn't have the technology we have today. They couldn't tap into to a Sabbath service. They couldn't connect in any way. They were put out temporarily until they recovered. We have this blessing today that if we're sick, we can still be here in the assembly, but in a virtual way. And so we can still see each other. We can still hear each other, just as we're commanded to do. We can communicate. We can still assemble. And the fact that there are miles and miles of physical distance between us does not violate the command. We still are able to have a holy convocation. We are very blessed to have a tool like this to bring us together. And so we have no excuse for not keeping the Sabbath. You know, we shouldn't use this virtual means as a crutch if we just don't feel like attending. If we overslept or if we have a problem with somebody in the congregation, like I said, I think I'll just go virtual today. Well, that's not, we shouldn't be using this as a crutch to allow us to skip out on the actual physical meeting. Attending in person is always best, as long as it's not an unwise thing to do when you're sick. Because in-person meeting makes for a closer fellowship and for fewer distractions. Now, if you're sitting on your computer watching Sabbath services take place live somewhere, and you could have attended, but you don't feel like it or whatever, you know, the problem is at home, distractions can come up. The dog can start barking, or there's a fire alarm outside, or your internet goes down. You know how many times we had that problem. But it's always best if we can meet in person. But when it's not possible or when it's not wise to do so, we have this. We have this ability to meet this way. It doesn't violate the command to have a holy convocation, a sacred assembly. It doesn't go against what Paul said to the Hebrews about not forsaking the assembly. We're here today. We're not forsaking the assembly, even though we're virtual. And we need to understand that this is the next best thing. We're still able to keep the Sabbath. We're still able to keep the holy convocation, even if for means beyond our control, we aren't able to meet in person. But certainly in person, we do have that closer fellowship. And it's best if we can. Now, you've heard talk about our First Amendment rights when the governor says you can only have 10 people in the hall. And certainly we've faced that over the last several months. Throughout this past year, we've faced that, where we can't meet in our regular location because we exceed a certain limit on the number that can attend. Does our First Amendment right prohibit limitation on churches? You know, I think we're finding out, and the Supreme Court did make a ruling on this not too long ago in New York, where the governor cannot restrict the attendance in a church service. And that's a good thing in a way. But this First Amendment is in place, which guarantees us the right to assemble. That's what our Constitution does. It guarantees us the right to assemble as a church. And the government cannot prohibit the free exercise of religion. The government cannot say you can't meet for church. The First Amendment does protect our freedom of religion. However, this virus that we're facing right now does not subject itself to the Constitution. It does what viruses do. It multiplies and it spreads. And we need to use common sense. It has nothing to do with our rights or our freedoms or the Constitution or the First Amendment. It has to do with us considering the advice that's been given to us. We're not doing it to follow authority. We're not doing it because some leader has proclaimed that we must. We're doing it because we're following wisdom. in Acts chapter 5, verse 29. Acts chapter 5, verse 29, a lot of people will turn to this and say, aha, but look at this. It says, but Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. And that will come up as a talking point. It's true that we obey God rather than men. That's true when God's law and man's law are in conflict with each other. And that's what was happening here in Acts chapter 5. But government mandates are not always against God's law. And we can still follow what man says if it's not against God. I emphasize that. We can still follow and should follow what man says, if it is a law or if it's a mandate of some kind, as long as it's not against God. And when we meet virtually like this, we are not going against the commandment. If we can still assemble virtually, we are still within God's law. So we need to respect some of these things that are coming down the pike from our leaders telling us what we can and can't do. Because remember, they're trying to help. They're trying to protect us from a spreading virus and to keep us healthy. And if we don't listen to them because it's our rights and we get sick, then, you know, we should have listened. We should have done what was said. Now, it's very possible, and we've seen firsthand, that you can go by what the government says and still get sick. It happens. You know, we can't always avoid it. In the Philadelphia congregation, the day that everybody contracted this virus, everybody was wearing a mask, doing what they were supposed to do. Social distance seating was enforced. But somehow it still got through. We don't know how. We're not pointing fingers at anybody. I don't want anybody to be blaming anybody for bringing it to the congregation, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where it came from. Don't try to figure out who was the first person to have it and bring it to us. It may have been somebody at the hotel that brought it. Somebody, whoever was setting up the seats that day, perhaps. We don't know. We don't know where it came from, and we don't really care where it came from, outside of the fact that we want to prevent it from happening in the future. But we don't want to be pointing fingers at anybody and saying that it's your fault. That's not what we do. So we can still assemble in this format, and that's great. And it's something we should be thankful for, because it does give us the ability to continue keeping the Sabbath. I'm going to go into my third message today. Keeping the faith. These are all disjointed. They are all totally separate messages, but you'll see how they tie together when we're done. We know that without faith, it's impossible to please God. It says that in Hebrews 11:6. We're very familiar with that. And especially in a time of crisis, we need to have a strong faith in God. Because there's a time coming soon when we will not survive without faith. Events are going to occur in this world that will try to shake your faith. We can never let that happen. We must endure to the end. Over the years, I've known a lot of people who profess to have faith in God. And I know that they were diligent in what they believed, and they professed that they had strong faith. And in fact, their faith was so strong that, oh, I'd never think of going to a doctor. My faith is in God. I don't need a doctor. And I know that some parents lost children to illnesses because they wouldn't take them to a doctor. I know one particular instance where a young child died of appendicitis because his parents wouldn't take him to a doctor. I know of someone who felt that taking an aspirin for a headache was the wrong thing to do, that it will cost you your salvation if you dare take a pill. What does it say in Matthew 9, verse 11? I think this should put it all to rest. Matthew 9, verse 11. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" When Jesus heard that, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick." Christ said that you need a doctor when you're sick. He was very plain about it. The sick need a doctor to help them. Now, I know that people had this certain zeal, and they were saying that it was all faith. But it went beyond faith. It was more than just faith. You know, it's possible to have zeal or enthusiasm and call it faith, but it might be the wrong kind of zeal. Romans chapter 10, verse 1. Romans 10, verse 1. "Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they may be saved. For I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted to the righteousness of God." You can have a zeal based on self-righteousness. You can feel in your heart that you are more righteous than someone else because your faith is in God. It's not in any doctor. It's in God. It's not in a pill. My faith is in God. And that's totally useless if the emphasis is on your own righteousness. Now, we're all familiar with the joke about the guy who was on the roof in the flood, and the three people came by to rescue him, and he turned them away because his faith was in God. You know, that's a joke that's as old as the hills. And if you've not heard it, you've been living in a cave or something, I don't know, for all these years, because, I'm not going to tell the joke, but if you want to hear it sometime, just contact me if you're not familiar with it. But this man trusts that God will save him, and he turns three rescuers away, and he didn't realize that it was God who sent the rescuers to him. You know, he was waiting for this dazzling miracle. He was waiting for the lightning bolt or the puff of smoke or something dazzling, something that was really dramatic. You know, all of God's miracles aren't like the Red Sea opening up. Some of them are very low key. Some of them are not even recognizable by many people except the one that's the recipient of the miracle. God's miracles are not meant to be dazzling. They're not meant to be accompanied by lightning bolts and puffs of smoke. Oftentimes, God uses human instruments to do his work. And sometimes God intervenes by sending you to the right doctor. Sometimes we ask God to help us to be in the right hands. You know, God has allowed man to learn much about human anatomy, and some doctors can do very amazing things. How'd they learn that? Well, they learned it because God allowed them to learn it. He allowed people to be able to discover these things. It's not to say that everything that a doctor does is beneficial or most advantageous to you. Some things you don't want to put your trust in, and I won't go there. But there are some things that you would rather just have faith that God will take care of you, because the remedy might be worse than the disease itself. God isn't going to heal you, however, if you don't do what you need to do. If you break your arm, I'm not going to go to a doctor and get it set. I'm just going to depend on God. I have faith. My faith is strong. He'll heal my arm. He'll put it back together. But the bone doesn't get set right, and it never heals. What about high blood pressure? You know, one of the main causes of high blood pressure is too much sodium in your diet. Now, sodium is found in so many different things, and we probably all get too much of it. Sodium is found in biscuits and in cookies, in flour tortillas, because they all have baking soda. Baking soda is a sodium compound. And of course, then there's salt. salt contains sodium, and that's a killer for high blood pressure. That's one of the main culprits for raising your blood pressure. If you do nothing but ask God to heal you, is that enough? I'm going to show you why it's not. A doctor can show you how to change your diet or your lifestyle, can show you what you need to do to work on this problem of high blood pressure. Now, God will heal you. God is perfectly capable of healing you, but you have to do your part. And if you're working against him by eating a lot of cookies and putting a lot of salt on your food, then it's not going to work. It's not going to be beneficial to you. God is not going to heal you if you're working against him. Can we pray to God for protection on the highway? And we trust God's going to keep us safe as we're driving, and then we get in our car and we drive recklessly? You know, basically what you're doing is tempting God. That's dangerous territory. You know, we don't ask God to protect us on the road and then drive like a maniac. That's not doing our part. But sometimes we say, well, I have faith, and that's all I need. Faith isn't faith if it's based on self-righteousness. We protect ourselves however we can, and we let him do the rest. That's what keeping the faith is all about. Okay, those are the three messages. Now, let's conclude all this. Let's put the messages together. In our present situation, you know, we have this virus around us that is just spiking. It's getting higher and higher. It's going to reach the level where it was last spring if we're not careful. We have some inconveniences in this situation. We can't meet in large crowds. We have to limit the amount of people in a restaurant, or maybe the restaurant has to close entirely. And we have to wear those masks. You know, nobody ever said the path to the kingdom was going to be smooth. And as we look back over the year 2020, I think most of us would say it wasn't such a great year. And we look to 2021 and we say, is 2021 going to be any better? Well, I'm here to tell you that just taking down the old calendar and putting up a new one is not going to make the world better. It's not going to make this a better place. And if anything at all, each year as it goes by may get progressively worse. And the day will come when we will wish we were back in good old 2020. Because it was so much better then. Now, I don't mean to be sounding negative by this. I'm just saying that as we get closer to the end times, things will get tough. If all we had to worry about was a pandemic, we'd be fine. But we're going to have so much more going on around us as the end gets closer and things get more difficult. And so perhaps 2020 was just preparing us for things to come. We might find face masks to be an uncomfortable nuisance, and maybe in some ways they help and in other ways not so much. But the day may come when you wish you had a face mask and you can't get one. Is it too much to ask if wearing a mask will help somebody? After all, isn't it our duty to help protect each other? Are we willing to be our brother's keeper? It's our Christian duty to avoid harm to other people as much as we're able. So we shouldn't be griping about having to wear a mask. It's a small sacrifice to make for the good of those around us. And we appreciate being able to attend Sabbath services in person. You know, having to go virtual is not what we'd all prefer. We all want to be able to assemble on the Sabbath physically, but be thankful we have internet connections. Maybe God inspired their invention for this very purpose. Who knows? Virtual meetings still constitute holy convocations. We're not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. We still have a time after services to get together for some fellowship. And we make sure that we keep that in the program so that we can all edify each other as much as is possible. In person is better, but we can still keep the Sabbath. So let's be thankful, because one day we might not be able to keep it even virtually. One day, as we get close to the end time, or even in the end time, there might not be an internet. A lot of our infrastructure might go down. We might not be able to have a virtual meeting, and we might not be able to meet in person either. And so these things are minor inconveniences now. The masks and the restrictions on meeting halls, they are something that is a part of life these days, but it's a minor inconvenience. Let's not be so upset about it that we start talking about rebelling against it. Oh, we have our rights. You know, we have the First Amendment. We don't have to live by all these things. There's a reason why we're being told these things. And if we ask God to protect us and to help us, we got to do our part. We got to keep ourselves protected. We got to keep each other protected. We got to do what we've got to do and let God do the rest, the part that we can't do for ourselves. You know, the only thing that's going to get us through the times that are ahead of us is faith. Now, there are people today who say, well, I have faith. I don't need a face mask. I have faith. God's going to protect me. He's not going to let me get this virus. God will protect us. And we can still assemble in person because we have faith. Now, have you ever heard anybody say that? Is that faith? Or is that just self-righteous enthusiasm? And don't be the guy in the boat that fails to see God in what's going on. Maybe God sent us face masks and the internet so that we could still be alive and be healthy and meet together when the rest of the world has to keep apart from themselves. You know, we need to remember that God sometimes works through people. Sometimes he works through doctors, and sometimes he works through our leaders who tell us what we should be doing and what we should not be doing in order to stay healthy. We need to act on that. We need to not rebel against it and not say, well, God will protect me. I can live recklessly, and God will protect me. No, it doesn't work that way. We need to use common sense. We need to heed the warnings around us. They might just be in place because God inspired them. Will God still protect us if we act foolishly or if we neglect the warnings that are being given? Many of these warnings are for our own well-being. And people will say, well, don't you think they're just political? Yeah, maybe some of them, maybe some of the things we're hearing are just political, but not all of it. We saw firsthand what can happen when we all meet together. And we had 19 people come down sick in the congregation on the same day. You might think it could have come from different places, but it was all on the same day. That's kind of obvious. You know, so maybe these warnings are directly from God. When our local leaders say, do this or do that, maybe God is speaking through them. Let's not count that out. And let's continue to do what we know we're supposed to do, but to do it in a way that we are protecting one another, that we're still doing what God commands us to do, and we're still having faith in God to do it. So let's pay attention to the directives that we're being given. Wear your mask. Stay at home when you're directed to stay at home. Don't assume God will protect you if you act carelessly and ignore the warnings. Avoid complaining about the inconveniences of the year 2020. Instead, be thankful, because we may never have it this good again.